Please be advised the contents of this episode has sensitive material talking about human and sex trafficking. Welcome to the San Diego Psychological Association's podcast, Diving into Healing. I'm your host, Dr. Michelle Carcel. This podcast has been developed with the intent to inform and educate the general public and providers and should not be relied upon for any other purpose. The content, views, and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the speaker and not those of the San Diego Psychological Association. Today's show is on human trafficking in our society. I'm happy to introduce our guest today, Kay Thomas. Welcome, Kay, and thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yes, this is a heavy topic to say the least. It was one that I myself had to educate myself just in general with the statistics. And boy, I'm just so happy you're here. It's a heavy conversation, but I think one that's very needed that we discuss, especially in our society. And I just wanted to start with an introduction to you. You have a lot of very interesting work in this field, very impressive work. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got drawn to this?
Yeah, I've been in the field of victim services for about 10 years now. I actually started in sexual and relationship violence, predominantly domestic violence. I'm a survivor myself. And so I really wanted to be able to give back to advocates and therapists and a community that really helped me heal. And so I started in that space, working in shelters and hotlines, doing emergency response and crisis response on college campuses and things like that. And eventually, once I graduated with my master's, I found myself continuing to do victim service-based work and then found myself in the anti-trafficking field, which I think for me, while it seemed like definitely not somewhere where I saw myself ending up when I started this journey. In fact, I think when I started working in the mental health field, I didn't even know what trafficking was. In my mind, it was something so different than what I see today. But it really made sense as I kind of began the process of working with folks who had experienced sexual violence and people who had experienced even domestic violence and were also experiencing trafficking or exploitation at the hands of their partners or people in their family or friends or folks in their community. It actually made sense as kind of a natural progression to end up here in the anti-trafficking movement.
Wow, that's thank you so much, especially given your background. There's a personal piece to this, and it's really wonderful that you've been able to contribute so much. So again, really grateful for you to give us your knowledge and your background on a very sensitive topic and one that isn't discussed enough, in my opinion.
No.
Yeah. One of the things that I found that was interesting is while I was doing my own research here, there's just variations of information, but it's again not put in the media. It's not really discussed. And I think we could just start maybe with the educational background of it. By definition, and maybe you can help educate us here, what is human trafficking then?
That is a great question. You know, a lot of times when we think of human trafficking, maybe we think of examples of slavery, or we think of examples of maybe somebody in a dark shipping container that's coming into a port in the middle of the night, and it's a group of people taken out of that shipping container and put into the back of a truck and they're never seen again, right? We often think of it as this thing that kind of happens in secret, and it's really hard to identify. But trafficking is actually the opposite. It actually happens in plain sight around us all the time. And one of the reasons it's hard for us to identify is because in America in particular, our history is founded upon trafficking and exploitation. And so it makes it really hard to see. But what we know about human trafficking today and what we see when we talk about that is this idea that someone, the trafficker or someone who maybe is in the process of facilitating this, is going to use something like force, fraud, or coercion to cause someone else to do something that maybe they wouldn't normally say yes to. And maybe that's things like having that person engage in sexual acts for money or for commercial goods of some kind. Maybe that is having someone engage in some form of labor exploitation. So an example of this that we see a lot in San Diego County, one of the largest areas of labor trafficking and exploitation, is actually in construction and food processing. So places that we might not normally think about it happening kind of behind closed doors, or the last time you passed a construction site, you probably didn't think that labor trafficking was happening there. And so a lot of times what we see is it's specifically an individual, maybe when in a position of power, taking advantage of that power, either using physical force, using fraud, pretending to be someone's intimate partner or a boss, or to give them documents that they need, maybe if they're an undocumented individual, or even coercion, using threats of harm to that person. So not actually harming them, but saying, hey, if you don't do what I say, I'm going to tell the father of your children that you're lesbian and you're going to lose custody of your kids. If you don't do what I say, I'm going to call immigration and I'm going to have you deported. And so we see trafficking happening in a lot of different spaces. And here in San Diego in particular, we know that trafficking brings in an estimated $810 million per year in profit.
Wow.
It's actually the second largest illicit economy. It's surpassed weapon sales and it's just below drug sales. And that's actually nationwide. It's just below drug sales. So it really is this giant issue that we have here in San Diego that just kind of hides in plain sight. So it makes it really hard to see on a regular basis.
Wow. That's absolutely, again, it blows my mind that we're not having these discussions more frequently given these statistics and how this is happening and it's happening right under our noses. And to break it down from what I understand, and please correct me if I'm wrong, there's basically two main types of human trafficking, and that's labor trafficking and sex trafficking. Is that accurate?
Yes. So labor trafficking is really any type of trafficking that would happen outside of the sex industry. So that could be any form of labor. I think part of it too is, so we have these two forms. We have sex trafficking, which is really anything that might occur in the sex industry. Folks have a tendency to think of it as more prostitution-based services, but really folks can be sexually exploited. We've seen people be exploited through things like OnlyFans, that really popular app that a lot of people are hearing about these days. We've seen people be exploited through pornography, through webcams and chat lines as well. And so it's not just that specific idea that we have of someone engaging in some form of prostitution. We actually see this happening also in strip clubs, in dancing and things like that as well. And I think the other piece that we frequently see and bring up is the reality that many people don't just experience one form of trafficking. They might experience multiple forms of victimization at the same time. And so if we're just looking for one form of trafficking, like sexual exploitation, as an example, we might miss a whole nother area that folks maybe need services or help. And so we kind of try to remind folks of that, especially when we think about trafficking in particular, when we think about labor trafficking, a lot of times we think about folks who are undocumented as an example. And the reality is with the current pandemic, we have seen a huge increase in the number of people who are U.S. citizens, youth in particular, who are experiencing trafficking because they're desperate for work or they're desperate to meet a specific need. We've seen lots of folks experience labor trafficking who maybe moved into someone's home to help provide home health care, and they were trafficked in that situation. We've seen people who were starting construction jobs or even jobs where they thought they were going to go around selling things like, you may have heard of people with that traveling sales crew where they're trying to sell a magazine subscription or overpriced candy. That's an example of labor trafficking for our youth. It's actually been here in the U.S. since about the early 1970s that that's been going on. And so again, I think it's one of those things that it kind of hides in plain sight. So we miss it when we see it because we're so used to seeing folks interact with us in a certain way and not realizing that they're being exploited on the other side.
Yeah, I'm glad that you brought up those examples because it makes me think a little bit about when we talk about trauma and we think about big T trauma and we think about little T trauma. And, you know, most of us, when I talk to people, at least for myself, and I bring up the word trauma, a lot of times people immediately go to the big T stuff, which is more, we think, rape, sexual victimization, assault, anything to that level. But, you know, little T trauma, which it could be, and I'm thinking more of an emotional or verbal abuse versus what we're discussing here, but, you know, it could be anything that changes our brain, changes the way we function in interpersonal relationships or an occupational or in any type of setting. And if we translate that to this, I mean, we're talking about any form of exploitation. We're talking about various levels, various degrees, but it's still trauma. It still falls in these categories. And I'm glad you brought up the part where it brings up those little T things, because I didn't even think about some of this stuff, but I read different reports specifically here to the US and with COVID and the pandemic, how it has increased so very much. And it's anything from online sexual exploitation or, you know, things like you said, OnlyFans. But I was reading a report that stated here in the US and in the UK that tenants, mainly women who could not pay their rent or, had, concerns about in financial situations due to loss of work or situations like that, they were forced to engage in sex acts as payment.
Yes.
And that's happening in the US and in the UK. You know, you think of like this happening more to marginalized societies, which it does, unfortunately, mm-hmm. from what I've read, and please correct me at any point. This is disproportionately occurring to individuals of marginalized and oppressed populations as well. Is that correct?
Absolutely. And I think the pandemic really highlighted the ways in which there are so many, focusing on Americans in particular, there are so many Americans that are just right at the edge of that housing insecurity, right? Their one paycheck, their one big car repair or medical bill or big expense away from being in a space of housing insecurity. And so what we find on a really regular basis, right, there's a lot of risk factors for trafficking. And one of those absolutely can be houselessness, housing insecurity, poverty, as an example, because someone might be willing to engage in an act or behavior out of a space of desperation that they might not normally in another setting. And so part of the struggle here, we often refer to this as survival sex, exchanging some form of sexual act, whether that is in person or online, to meet a basic need, food, shelter, clothing, a cell phone. And so when we think about that in particular, survival sex is, while it's not the same thing as trafficking, what we find is many people, that places them at very high risk, and they end up falling into spaces of exploitation very quickly. The other thing that you mentioned as well that I think is really vital and important is the way that this exposed that there were people that this was already the reality of their life, right? They were living in this space. And then the pandemic hit and folks were experiencing even more hardship and insecurity. But another thing that we found from the pandemic, and we knew this before, but I think the pandemic really drove this home, is that one of the biggest risk factors and vulnerabilities for trafficking is actually feelings of rejection and marginalization. And, everyone on this earth, if you go through middle school or high school, you experience feelings of rejection or marginalization, right? We all do at some point in time. It's a very natural human emotion and experience. But it's also an emotion and experience that's extremely isolating internally. And oftentimes when we're in that space, right, we also have a tendency to kind of isolate from other social spaces and connections too. And that is where the trafficker comes in and says, I'm going to help you meet that need, right? So we've seen this huge increase, especially of youth in particular, being targeted, being groomed online into sexual exploitation during the pandemic because folks aren't feeling, especially our youth, not feeling connected to each other, not having that opportunity, and seeing lots of folks, especially youth in particular, being contacted by traffickers. We actually had a case here in San Diego, I want to say it was in February of last year, where a trafficker reached out to a young girl who was 11 years old on this app called Roblox. Which for folks who aren't familiar with Roblox, it's a gaming platform. It's a gaming app. And there's lots of different apps different games you can play. It's really popular with kids. And there's a direct message feature. And so this adult reached out to this 11-year-old via this direct message feature, which her parents probably thought, right, this is a safe place for my child to just play some games, right? Didn't even think about a direct message feature. This man reached out to her and groomed her, meaning he slowly brought down her defenses internally. He started to make her believe that she was safe in this relationship. And she actually left her home to go with him. And thankfully, her parents discovered this very quickly and were able to recover her within a matter of hours before there was any additional damage done and before she was able to be for him to actually exploit her in that way. But that's a perfect example of we've seen this insane jump of about 95% in the amount of youth that are being groomed or targeted online specifically through every single app you can think of. If it's an app that you can send a direct message, youth are getting that.
Wow.
I was in a presentation recently where we were talking about online safety with youth. And one of the youth, actually a couple of them, but one in particular said, I've stopped using Facebook because I get contacted by adult men almost solely in my direct messages, asking me to send pictures or sending me explicit content, explicit videos, pictures, comments. And so I've just stopped using Facebook because it doesn't feel safe to me anymore. which is really interesting that Facebook, it seems like to be, you know, the most innocuous platform, right? Lots of folks use Facebook, but that's actually one of the places where youth are already saying, I'm completely avoiding it because that's the only, all the traffic and noise I get is just that. So I'm going to other spaces now.
Yeah. Wow. Gosh. I'm glad that you're bringing up youth and children, because I think that's really important for parents who are listening or providers, you know, that we're kind of keeping a really updated on this and just thinking about these things in a conscious way. But yeah, I read another statistic that there's approximately 40 million plus people that are trafficked around the world, and approximately 20 to 25% of them are children.
Yes.
So this is a very dangerous statistic. And now with the pandemic, we've seen this increase of online trafficking and these venues, these whatever we want to call it, these avenues that these people are taking. And it just means more hypervigilance on behalf of, you know, parents, caregivers, providers. You know, we all need to be very aware of this. And I think, you know, one of the things that for me was really interesting, and I'm hoping you can help me out, we're talking a little bit about how this even happens. And I think that might be helpful for us to talk about that in a grander scale. You know, you gave some examples, which I think is really great, but how does someone end up in trafficking? Like, what are the statistics, or what is it that leads to this?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, it's interesting because I've been working with survivors of trafficking now for about 6.5 years in different capacities. And I can say that I still to this day haven't come across two people who have the same story. There's definitely some common vulnerabilities and risk factors that folks have. And sometimes those are things like poverty or substance use, mental health concerns or challenges, maybe involvement with the juvenile justice system as an example. And so those are some common things we see. We do see folks sometimes who have backgrounds of abuse, where maybe they experienced abuse in their home. And so it was hard for them to understand and identify healthy relationships out in the adult world. And so they fell victim to very toxic and abusive relationships. But I think one of the things that I see on a regular basis, and I think, again, there's no consistent victim type, but some of the things that I really see that are a consistent driver for trafficking are folks are looking for a sense of belonging and connection. They're looking for people who have their back, right? They're looking for those, you know, as the youths would say, their ride or dies, right? They're looking for that person who's going to be there with them. And the thing about traffickers in particular is that traffickers are very savvy. They know that every individual has a different need, and they don't really care what the need is because they're ready to meet it for you. So an example of this is actually, and I'll also share a few some examples that we've seen commonly, especially for providers and for parents. But there was a case here in San Diego where there was this individual, I want to say it's about 2 years ago, was brought up on charges. And the charges stated that this person sent over 30,000 messages in 1 month on various social media platforms. So like Facebook, Kick, Instagram, Snapchat, Twitter, anywhere this person could send that direct message. And he was only asking one question. And the question was, are you happy with your current situation? And he got all sorts of responses, right? He got people that said, no, I'm not happy with my current situation. I'm not sure how I'm going to pay my rent next month. I'm not happy my boyfriend just cheated on me. And, you know, I loved him. I thought we were going to be together forever. No, I'm not happy with my current situation. My parents won't buy me that new iPhone I want. Right. And he doesn't really care what the response is, because what he's looking for is his way in, his vulnerability, the vulnerability that you have that he's going to meet. So you want that intimate relationship? He'll be your knight in shining armor. You need that job to pay those bills? He's got a great job. He's going to teach you how to do all the work. You're looking for somebody to help get you that money really quick so you can get that commercial good that you want, which is so common for our youth. We see a lot of our youth being lured into this space by commercial goods. Hey, send me a nude of yourself and I'll send you this money to your Cash App. Send me this nude of yourself and I'll you know, Amazon you those boots you really wanted. And so we see youth often starting in the space of saying, well, you know, why give it up for free when I could charge for it, right? Kind of moving to a very specific idea of what they might believe to be sexual empowerment, but is really actually them being sexually exploited.
Right.
And so we see that in a lot of different ways, where one of the biggest things is that we know traffickers and facilitators are not these kind of strangers in the dark. They're often people that your child or someone has formed a relationship with in some way, shape, or form, and it's developed over time. And so some of the common ways that we do see this happen, though, is, for example, our trans and our queer youth in particular. I myself am part of the queer community, and many of us, without disclosing how old I am, the internet became a household thing when I was in middle school. It was accessible for, you know, middle class families. And so I personally use the internet in the same way that queer youth use the internet today to find people who are like them, that think like them, that look like them, that talk like them, to find a sense of community. And what we often find is that traffickers are actually looking for those youth so that they can exploit them. Many folks don't know that trans and non-binary folks in particular are often very sexually exploited, and they're very heavily fetishized. And so they're sought out by traffickers online. They're sought out in public spaces. And so what we might see is we might see a trafficker looking for a young trans youth to say, well, I'll buy you these things that you want, you know, for body modification purposes or identity, you know, for your expression. I'll buy you these things you want, especially if you have a parent who's not affirming in any way and a parent who's not paying attention. Mm-hmm. Then we've really got this youth in our hands, because I've got somebody who's affirming my identity and they have a checkbook. They're getting me things that I want. And so we see that happen often with youth. But really what we see the most that is that most common is that space of that relationship, developing that relationship with a person, finding that, you know, we see a lot of foster youth who experience trafficking because their trafficker creates a sense of not only meeting the financial need they might have, but emotional needs that they might have. Mm-hmm. The other place I'll mention too, just briefly, is we see a lot of trafficking happening for folks who are not only for folks who are undocumented, but folks who maybe don't have a lot of experience in the labor market, mm-hmm. right? So they don't necessarily know what their rights are.
Right.
And so we find them experiencing exploitation and trafficking on construction sites. We find people, this is not uncommon, where we'll have folks say like, well, I was working for this restaurant and I'm undocumented. And so they told me if I complained, they didn't give me my paycheck for 2 months. And they told me if I complained, they'd call immigration. And so seeing people not even fully aware of what their rights are as workers, it does not matter if you are documented or undocumented in the state of California, you have rights as a worker, mm-hmm. no matter what. And so not necessarily being aware of that. And so we also see that piece, right, that traffickers are looking for people who are unaware of their rights, mm-hmm. who have these larger vulnerabilities. Anyone can experience trafficking, absolutely. And we also know that traffickers are going to look for, you know, the easiest prey, the prey that's going to be less defensive to them.
Right. I'm glad you used the word prey, because my first thought was this predatory action, right? That this sounds, I think a little bit of gangs. I think a little bit about just these type of behaviors, very antisocial in nature, of course. That's, you know, obviously anybody who would conduct this type of behavior is falling into some form of category like that. But yes, it's a lure in, it seems appealing, and they prey on people who are vulnerable. Again, coming back to the marginalized oppressed groups, people who may not be aware of their rights, you know, youth population. And again, just really exploiting the vulnerabilities in these populations to the extent that they do. And gosh, this is just so significant, because anybody, like you said, can be victim to this. And it's interesting, because I'm thinking of even like the most simplest things. I received a letter in the mail, you know, trying to do my taxes and stuff, and it looked official and all this and that. And, you know, before I take a second glance, I'm like, this isn't even official. It's, you know, from a second, third party company. But simplest things like that, if we don't pay attention, we miss it. And as parents, as providers, you know, as a community, we need to be on top of this. And I think that brings me to talking to you too about just the indicators of human trafficking. What do we have to look out for? What do we tell parents? What do providers need to look out for? How do we help the community look out for this?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, and it's interesting, as we talk about things to look out for, thinking about the reality that here in San Diego County in particular, what we know about the research here in San Diego is that we are seeing our traffickers and our facilitators at younger and younger ages. There was actually a study that came out from USD and Point Loma Nazarene University, University of San Diego and Point Loma Nazarene University in 2016. And they actually recorded a case of a trafficker who was 12 years old in his class that was attempting to recruit other young women in his middle school class into trafficking. And so I say that to say, one of the things to keep out for and to look out for is our the blinders that maybe we put up, or our perception of who we think is doing harm or what we think harm looks like. So I think that's the first piece, right? We've seen folks as young as middle school engaging in this facilitation process. You know, I've seen, when I think about the traffickers that I've seen folks who were trafficked by their family, by parents. I've seen folks that were trafficked by a sibling or an intimate partner. I've seen people trafficked by their teachers. I've seen people trafficked by folks within group home spaces or within, you know, more official spaces. I've seen folks trafficked by their boss, right? So there's a lot of ways that it can happen. And so thinking about that component in particular, I think there are a couple of big risks, a big indicators to think of. So of course, when we think about San Diego County in particular, and thinking about our youth, kind of thinking about youth first and what parents might look out for, we see right now, especially with the ongoing pandemic, that youth are still being predominantly targeted in online spaces. So I think first and foremost, one of the conversations is about having conversations with your youth and your children about how they use online platforms. There is, oh my goodness, his name is Roger Martin, and I think it's Humans for Good, maybe is what it's called. I'll have to look it up and I'll send it to you. There's an individual, his name is Roger Martin, and he is actually a retired Qualcomm exec, and he's done some really incredible research on creating software and technology that you can embed that syncs up with different social media apps like Instagram, like TikTok, so that it can screen your child's account for high-risk behavior. High-risk behavior, things like certain words they might be using, links they might be going to, things they might be posting online as well. And so there are some platforms like that that kind of help you monitor a child's behavior. But I think more than anything, it's really about being in touch with what's going on with your kiddo, right? Looking at those components of things like, if you have a child, first and foremost, if your child is, you know, being extremely secretive when they're on the phone, maybe you walk in the room and they immediately, you know, hang up the phone, or I've got to go. Like they're moving their computer, and it's a little bit more than the normal teenage desire for privacy and independence and paranoia. This is a little bit more heightened. You know, we see youth who maybe they are extremely, extremely secretive about what they're doing on a regular basis. Maybe they have more than one cell phone. Oftentimes youth have more than one cell phone when they're experiencing exploitation, because right, if you've got that app monitoring your kiddo's social media, of course they're not going to use that phone anymore. They're going to go use something else. So looking for some of those components. But I think other things to think about is really conversations with your youth about, especially in particular online. We actually have on North County Lifeline's website, so if you go to nclifeline.org and go to our human trafficking awareness page, there's actually a great 10-minute video that talks a little bit about how to talk to your youth about online safety, because I think part of this is helping youth build safe behaviors. The internet is a fabulous resource, but every single site on the internet potentially has a dark side to it, right? Every social media platform, you know, it's all about where you go. And so we've got to teach youth how to have boundaries with themselves. And that is part of the process of helping keep them safe, is teaching them the safe areas of the internet to go to and the not so safe areas of the internet to go to, and how to respond. If you're getting a text, you're getting DMs from somebody that you don't feel comfortable with, what do you do? Do you just block them? Do you share that information with your parents? Other things too to think about is really teaching youth how to understand how to create relationships online. Something we see that happens really commonly, especially with online grooming, is that a youth will get a friend request from somebody, right? And they'll click on it and they'll say, oh, this person is friends with three of my other friends, so they must be safe. And they say yes and let that person in, right? And it turns out that maybe the other three friends also said yes because the other three friends were saying yes to the same request, right? And so this kind of stranger comes into the space that this youth thinks has been vetted by their friends, but really hasn't. And right, this must be a safe person because they know my friend. But again, having conversations with youth about, if you don't know this person in real life, what does this look like? Accepting friend requests. What type of information do we share? What do we put on our profiles? Even if my profile is private, what's available publicly that people can see on my profile? Pictures that I'm tagged in, things that I might put on there in my description. So those are a couple of things that we think about. And then in addition to that, really thinking about working with youth on, so there are a couple of things that come to mind, but one of the biggest things is working with youth on decreasing any sense of shame around asking for help when something goes wrong.
Definitely.
Right? Who do you go to? Right? Who's your trusted adult? Who's the safe people in your life? Whoever those might be. Who can you go to where you won't feel a sense of shame if you're in trouble or if something happened and you need to talk about it? We find what happens with a lot of our youth, especially who are exploited online, is that often blackmail becomes a very big issue. The person will pretend maybe to be a romantic partner. Oh, you're so beautiful. I'm a modeling agent. Send me some photos, right? The photos become more and more explicit, or the content becomes more and more explicit. And then the trafficker will say, if you don't do what I say, I'm going to send these photos to your parents. I'm going to send it to your pastor. I'm going to send it to your principal, right? And so how do we start to have conversations with youth? Because cognitively, right, they don't have the same brain structure we do as adults,
right,
to help them start to understand when, if something like that were to happen, there's always someone safe you can go to. You don't have to fear shame, right? We're not going to focus on the shame piece.
Right.
And so I think a lot of it is harm reduction and starting in that space in particular. I think, you know, kind of more broadly and briefly mentioning a couple of additional things to think about is if you're working with people in the community, if you're working with people as a provider, or you're even working with people, you know, in a service perspective, is thinking about those overlaps of human trafficking and exploring those pieces. We see the overlaps of traumas with big T's and little T's, right? We see both of those happening. Mm-hmm. We see the, you know, the intersection of poverty, of housing insecurity, of substance use, right? And so keeping those pieces in mind, I'm always going to, as a provider, when I have someone maybe who has a substance use addiction, I'm going to keep in mind that maybe there's something else going on that I'm not quite fully have a handle on yet. But I think the other pieces to think about are the reality of things like how people meet their basic needs. Somebody might come out and share a story with you that you're definitely like, yes, that's trafficking.
Right.
But more often what we find is that people who have experienced trafficking, they don't call it trafficking. They don't call it exploitation. The federal government didn't even really codify it the way we understand it today until the year 2000. So a lot of people, this is a very common experience that many of the folks we work with that are adult survivors will say, I was in my 30s. I went to a conference. I heard about child exploitation and was like, holy crap, that happened to me. That's what happened to me. And so I say that to say, because it's become so normalized, it's kind of our job as providers to do a little bit more digging in other spaces and other ways to kind of come up with an understanding of what does exploitation truly look like for individuals, and how might that person define it, right? Maybe that they defined it as like, I that's just what I did to put food on the table. They don't call it trafficking. They don't call it survival sex. They just say, that's what I did to put food on the table. Or, you know, that was just the job that I had. That was the work that I did. And I didn't really get paid for the last 3 months of my work, but it was just easier to just leave because my boss was really abusive. Okay, like that's right. You don't have to report it, but let's talk about that experience of victimization and how you lost 3 months worth of pay because of an abusive boss who exploited you.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You're giving wonderful examples that, you know, cognitively, I think we, or logically, we can all hear and go, yeah, this is wrong, but it also isn't when you're in it. There's much more minimalization. You're minimizing, you know, the situation. And I think that it's really important that we bring it out in a broader spectrum. Again, big T, little T, this is something that can be on any part of this spectrum and still be exploitation. And, you know, I think of this often, and I talk about this a lot on the podcast, is about paradigm shifts. I just think that we as a society haven't acknowledged the extent of a lot of these situations, especially with tech and online being a huge part of our culture. It is our culture now. I mean, we're using it at this very moment, and it's going to be there for probably ever, and that we need to put these checks in place and that we need to have these discussions in a very concrete manner. I often talk to parents, and I don't know if you experience this, but a lot of times it's like, oh, I want to make sure that my kids have as much innocence as possible, that they're not having, you know, these conversations because they want to protect their children from having the hard conversations of what life can be. But in doing that, there's actually a lot more risk of victimization because there's a lack of knowledge and awareness. So I think it's important that we figure out that medium of how do we approach our family, our kids, our loved ones, and have these discussions in a healthy manner. And I'm glad that you brought up that resource. We're going to put that, make that available for anybody who's listening. So that way you can take a look at how to talk to your family, how to talk to your children, how to talk to each other about, you know, some of these horrific things that can occur. And ironically enough, I think all of us have experienced this. I know I certainly have gotten DMs from people I have no idea who they are. And it's just these random and you're like, nope, I'm not clicking that. But we have the intelligence wherewithal, again, the cognitive ability. Children do not, you know, their prefrontal cortex isn't developed to that level yet. They don't understand that people hurt in this way unless we explain, hey, let's be careful, right? So I'm just so glad that you're bringing up these really significant and important examples so that we can normalize something that is absolutely not normal, and that we can try to minimize exposure and potential trafficking to anybody who are in these marginalized groups. It's just all of these things. It can be anybody. So it's really important. And, you know, that brings me to my next question. What do we do if we think someone we know is being trafficked or being a victim of exploitation?
Yeah, that's a great question. So there are a couple of options. First and foremost, if you're worried that this is a situation of someone's kind of immediate safety, we always tell people, like, it's fantastic that you're a concerned citizen, but don't intervene directly because you might be placing yourself at risk as well. And like, I think about that example, right? It was a little bit more prior to COVID, but, you know, we would be in a crowded Vons parking lot and someone walks up and they're trying to sell you this overpriced magazine subscription. And that most likely is something called a traveling sales crew, which is a form of labor trafficking that's been present in the US since the 1970s. But I mention that because a lot of times when I give presentations, people will be like, so what do I do? And I'm like, well, don't be like, hey, excuse me, are you experiencing labor trafficking? Partially because that young person is going to be like, what are you talking about? And secondly, because they're actually being watched by somebody in that parking lot to make sure that they don't access help, to make sure that they don't run away or do anything they're not supposed to. And so if you were to try to offer assistance in that way, you may actually be increasing the risk of physical violence for that individual. You may be increasing at the risk of your own safety as well in that moment. So we always ask people, as fantastic as folks can be, and they're so concerned and so compassionate, you may actually, by directly intervening, be placing that person at higher risk. So something to keep in mind first and foremost. If you don't have the training and you don't have the experience, please use caution because you could do more harm for that person than good. If you do believe that it's a situation that's truly like a critical emergency, like you see someone experiencing physical violence as an example, of course, call 911. If not, there are a couple of other options you can do. The first option is you can call the National Human Trafficking Hotline, which the number for that is 888-3737-888. That's how they have it set up on their little website. So it's easy to remember.
Perfect.
There are a couple of options for that. So you can either call or you can text the Be Free, the number for Be Free. Either one is an option to contact the National Human Trafficking Hotline. And through that, there are a couple of options. You can connect people directly with services, but you can also report things that you see happening. So you can say, you know, I'm on the corner of University and La Mesa Boulevard. Here's this Vons that I'm at. This is what I'm seeing. I believe I'm watching someone experience labor trafficking. And they will take that information and send it along to the San Diego Human Trafficking Task Force, which is our local task force here that does the law enforcement branch and investigative work. And so they will actually go out and begin the process of investigating that tip based on where it's at, whose jurisdiction it's in, all of those different components. You can also call your non-emergency line in the area that you're in and report what's happening. If it's somebody that you have a sense of a connection with, like a family member or a friend, you can also provide them with information like for Project Life, North County Lifeline's Project Life. We are in North County, but we are a completely mobile program throughout the entire county of San Diego. You can provide them with information for our services. The vast majority of anti-trafficking services here in San Diego County are completely free to the folks who look to utilize them. They're not charged fees of any kind. They're predominantly all grant funded and private funding. The hardest thing is often that we see trafficking looking like something really specific out in the community. And so also remembering just to keep in mind our males in particular. Our male population is actually some of the highest risk for experiencing trafficking because no one's paying attention to them. When we think of trafficking, we think of maybe that young 15, 16-year-old girl, and we don't realize that also young men are experiencing sexual exploitation and labor exploitation too. So I think that's the other piece of kind of starting to, like you were saying, like that paradigm shift, right? Starting to expand your vista of understanding beyond kind of this small window to start to kind of open up the doors completely and see the larger vista of trafficking.
That's wonderful information. We are going to do our best to put as many of these resources available. And I know you're speaking specifically to San Diego, as this is where we are currently, but I imagine that there are also similar programs throughout the country in local communities. I encourage people to do the research there and take a look at your local community if you're not here in Southern California or in San Diego, because this is something for us to educate ourselves on, make sure specifically to, as you pointed out, expanding our view, not just it. We think, again, for me in particular, I'll just use myself as an example. I think trafficking, my first thought was sexual trafficking, right? That I, for some reason, that's where my mind went. But for others, it could be another form of trafficking, labor trafficking or what have you. But whatever it is, that we're expanding our knowledge, that we're making sure we have the resources and that we're, you know, making ourselves more educated on this topic, especially to protect those who are most vulnerable. I gravitate towards kids, obviously, because I just, you know, it's where my mind goes and just want to protect them all. But for anybody who needs this, there's so many people, adults as well, who, you know, we need to just have that awareness and make sure that we're taking care of our own. But this has been a wonderful conversation. I cannot thank you enough for coming on and educating myself and anyone who's listening. We're going to put the resources that you mentioned and make those available for people to take a look. But before we wrap up, is there anything additional you'd like to add?
You know, I think the biggest thing that always comes to mind for me that I always share is that trafficking is not a problem we're ever going to be able to arrest our way out of, right? We can pass laws, we can do all sorts of stuff. It's not something we're ever going to be able to arrest our way out of, because it's, first of all, one of the oldest crimes in human history. But second of all, because trafficking is like a fever, right? A fever is a symptom of an infection, of something bigger happening in the body. Trafficking is just like that. And so this is a problem that's going to take every single one of us to end together, not only through the way that we raise awareness and, you know, maybe you share this podcast with somebody and say, hey, I want you to hear about what I just heard is happening in San Diego. I didn't know. Maybe it's raising awareness, but it's also about the relationships that we build with each other. So just as a reminder for folks, even if you feel like, oh my gosh, this is something like it's so big and I don't feel like I can get involved, you actually can. There's so many ways you can get involved. And again, if you go to North County Lifeline, nclifeline.org, there's another video there that should be posted. Actually, I think it will be posted next week. That's a webinar we did recently that talks about how you can get involved within the anti-trafficking movement, whether it's looking to get involved on the front end, on prevention, on helping, you know, kiddos and youth have really strong, healthy relationships and boundaries, or looking to get involved on the back end of folks who have already experienced trafficking and looking to provide a gift in some way, your service in some way, shape, or form. So I just want to remind folks that this is a giant issue and it takes every single one of us to change together.
Absolutely. Kay Thomas, thank you so much for being on the show. I hope to have you back in the future. This was so knowledgeable and just vital information. So really appreciate you coming on. Thank you again.
Thank you so much, Michelle.
The information and advice offered is not intended to treat or diagnose and is not meant to replace any other professional consultation. If you'd like to know more about the San Diego Psychological Association, go to our website at sdpsych.org. That's sdpsych.org. Thank you so much for tuning in. Until next time, take care of yourself and be well.